All right, so this is Bio 231, October 21st, second little mini lecture in lab, and this is over the eyeball, okay, or vision. All right, so the eyeball has two main regions. One region is filled with structures directly related to vision, and then there are a bunch of other structures that help protect the eyeball and make the eyeball function so that the primary structures can work properly. And those we call accessory structures. Some accessory structures would be eyebrows, eyelashes, your eyelids, right? But also some muscles that move your eyeballs around. So you can look left and you can look right without turning your head by just moving your eyeball around. Those are called extrinsic eye muscles. Extrinsic means exterior to the eyeball itself. And here we have a nice model of an eyeball. Let me go to Doc Cam. Adjusting the image. All right, so I'll hold it up. You see extrinsic eye muscles. Oh. You see some, that was perfect timing. All right, I see some extrinsic eye muscles. Here's a dark band right here. And then I see one over here, and then there's going to be one underneath the eye. All right, so how are you going to know which one is which? There's a superior rectus, medial rectus, which means straight. All right, here's the clue. At least on these models, here is a big gland that is on the superior surface of the eye. And furthermore, it's lateral. So this, point to where this gland is on your eye, on your real eye. Yeah, it's over here, right? It's not medial, it's not right on top, it's lateral. This is the lacrimal gland, and the lacrimal gland produces tears, right? That lubricates your eyeball, prevents it from dehydrating. All right, so superior and lateral. So guess what muscle this is here? That's the superior rectus. Superior rectus. And this is the lateral rectus and medial rectus. And then the one way down over here is the inferior rectus. So it's really easy to appreciate that. All right, then down over here is the inferior oblique. You can see it coming. You can see the arrangement of the fascicles. And then the tendon of the superior oblique. So superior rectus, medial rectus, lateral rectus. Superior oblique because it's coming in on an angle. How's that? Okay. That's not bad. All right, let's talk about some layers of the eye. The outermost layer of the globe. All right, that's called the sclera. It's really tough. It's white. It's tough. It's tougher than leather. It's not as hard as an eggshell, but it's probably harder than an eggshell because an eggshell is what? Brittle. It can crack. When you cut through this tonight, you're going to have to be really careful. It takes a lot of force to get through it, and you want to make sure that once you get through, you don't, like, cut your finger. All right? And also, you really have to press hard. You don't want the fluid inside the eye squirting out at you, all right, which can happen. So you got the sclera. The next layer So here we got sclera. Am I on the screen?
Yes.
Yeah, sclera. Let me get this out of the way. These pieces out of the way. The next layer looks kind of what? Dark brown, reddish brown, something right here. This is the choroid. The choroid has these structures. What does that look like? The red. Yeah, it's a blood vessel. So the choroid has blood vessels. Right, and it's also dark. It helps absorb light that enters your eye so it doesn't flash around inside your eye, bounce around causing flashes. Right, and then the deepest layer is like this purple layer somebody told me right here. That's a purple? Is that purple? Yeah, there's some that are oranges. This is the retina. So the three layers of the eye, the sclera, the choroid, and the retina. But notice how thin the retina is. It's just a couple cell layers thick. The retina contains the photoreceptor cells. And there shouldn't be blood vessels in the retina because if there are blood vessels in the retina, it pushes away the photoreceptor cells, and then you can't perceive light since you don't have any receptors in that part of the retina. The two kinds of cells that you have in the retina are called rods and cones because they have that shape. One is kind of conical in shape, the other is very rod-shaped, and they have different functions. They also have different locations. Let's talk about the cone cells first. The cone cells allow you to see colors, and they give you high-resolution images. So that's the kind of image that gives you the best detail and the best color, and that's the one that people use most of the time when they look at something. Those are right on the posterior pole of the cell. So if light comes in to the eye, it goes straight to the back of the eye right here. All right, so this thing right here, I forget which one you have to know. It's either called the fovea centralis or the macula lutea. What do you got on your sheet? Oh, you got both. I'm glad. The macula lutea is an enlarged area. Okay, the macula lutea is an enlarged area that primarily has cones. So you can see fine detail and color vision, and in the very center of the macula lutea, you have the fovea centralis, and that's what's signified with this little tiny dot right here. That's the fovea centralis. It's smaller than the macula lutea, and it only has cone cells. That's the part of the retina that gives you the best vision, the fovea centralis and macula lutea. So when light comes straight in your eyes, it goes back to the macula lutea. It's an area on the retina that has primarily cone cells. It gives you your best vision.
The fovea centralis.
The fovea centralis. As a matter of fact, the fovea centralis only has cone cells. The macula lutea mostly only has cone cells. So the fovea centralis is the very center of the macula lutea. And some people, that part of the retina actually degenerates. And it's a real nuisance. It's a real tragedy when that happens. Anybody know what that's called? When just that one part of the retina degenerates, that's called macular degeneration. When the macula lutea goes away, we think maybe it's due to immune response or something happens to the blood supply in that part of the retina. And that's really disturbing because where does that affect your vision? Not your peripheral vision. You can still see nicely with your peripheral vision, but your central vision is destroyed. That would be like walking around all day long with somebody's fingertips right in front of your eyeballs like that, right? That's your most important vision, the vision right in the center of your visual field. So that's really too bad when that happens, okay? So can you see the fovea centralis and macula lutea? No, not on this one. But right here, I see a little halo and then a dark spot inside the halo. The halo is the macula lutea and the darker spot is the fovea centralis. And that's right behind the pupil. That should line up exactly behind the pupil. Okay. Macula lutea. Yeah, if it's not on your list, you don't have to know that for the practicum. Okay. As you move away from the fovea centralis to the more peripheral parts of the retina, cone cells give way to rod cells. So in your peripheral vision, you don't have very good detail. You can't see in detail. There's something else, too. And that is the rod cells can only see in black and white. They can't see color. So you might wonder, well, what's the purpose of having rod cells there? If you can't see color and they don't give you the same kind of detail, what's the advantage? Because they don't need bright light. They can see in very dim light. As opposed to cone cells, you can only see color and have good vision when the light is bright. So that's the disadvantage to the cone cell. You need bright light. Rod cells will work in dim light for you. Okay. Maybe some of you have noticed when you're outside looking at stars, if you look right at a star, it disappears. But if you look off to the side and look at that star with your peripheral vision, right, you can see it. And what's the reason for that? I don't know if anybody's ever done that in here, maybe. Just shake your head yes anyway. Okay, good. Okay, and that's because when you're looking at it with your peripheral vision, you're stimulating rod cells, which need less light to become stimulated. But if you look right at a star, try it tonight, if you look right at a star, if it's dim enough, it will just disappear. Because the cone cells need more light in order to function.
Or, I've actually, if you like throw your keys on the floor when it's dark and you look directly at them.
If it's really dark in a room and you drop something and you try and find it, you got to search with your peripheral vision, which are your rod cells. Okay, your cone cells don't work quite so well. So it's a real effect. There's a real reason for that. All right, so that's the layers of the eye. Let's talk about some chambers of the eye. Here I see a big space, right? That's what we call the posterior segment. And the posterior segment is filled with like a jello-like material. We call that vitreous humor. All right, it's like a jelly or a jello. When we do an eyeball dissection in a couple minutes, you'll see this gooey stuff in the posterior segment of the eye. That helps give the eyeball its shape, right? And it kind of holds the retina up against the choroid because the retina is very, very delicate. It likes to pull away from the choroid. And what's in the choroid that maintains the health of the retina? There's blood vessels. There shouldn't be blood vessels in the retina, right? And if the retina ever gets separated from the cornea, from the choroid, guess what happens to the retina in that area? It dies. It doesn't have oxygen, can't get nutrients, and it dies, and then you have a blind spot. And that's what they call that, retinal separation. Head trauma can produce retinal separations pretty easily. You'll see how delicate that retina is in just a little bit. So that's the posterior segment. You also have some cavities in the anterior part of the eye. All right, so this iris belongs here like this. And you have this clear part of the sclera, like that. This clear part of the sclera is the cornea. Remember, the sclera is really, really tough. But when it changes its properties to become transparent, to let light into the eye, it loses all that structural integrity. It's easily damaged as a result. And that's one thing that we need to protect today when we do a dissection, is we need to wear glasses or goggles or something so that we don't get any of those preserving chemicals on our cornea, because it's really sensitive material. And it also has a plethora of pain nerve endings in the cornea. And if those get stimulated, if you damage the cornea, I've been told, that will give you the most exquisite sense of pain you can experience. I don't know, hopefully no one's ever damaged the cornea by leaving contact lenses in for a long period of time or something, but it's excruciating pain. Is this true? If anybody, yes, you could raise your hand. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the pain is so excruciating, no one would ever think of leaving their contact lenses in again, ever. But actually, I've known two people to do it twice. Not day after day, but over a short period of time. Okay, but I've never known anybody to do it like three times. Two times was enough, okay, because the pain is so bad. All right, in this chamber here, in the anterior segment, you don't have vitreous humor. You have something called aqueous humor, which is a watery-like material. And so what can you tell me about water? If it's like Jell-O, if we put a bowl of Jell-O right here, took the Jell-O out of the bowl and tilted the table, what would the Jell-O do? It would kind of sag a little bit, but would it dribble off the table?
No.
But if we put some water right here and tilted the table, what would happen to the water? It would just run right off the table, right? So that causes some problems in the eye. Because of that aqueous humor, if the cornea is damaged to the point to where it's perforated, if there's a hole put in the cornea, of course that's going to feel really bad, but that fluid, the aqueous humor, is going to run right out, because that's what water does. All right, and that aqueous humor is necessary because it's causing a separation between the cornea and the lens. It's separating the cornea and the lens all the time. But when the aqueous humor runs out, the cornea can touch the iris right here, and no one has ever been able to figure out how to unattach them. All right, so when that aqueous humor dribbles out of the eye, the cornea gets glued to the iris. And the iris gets glued to the lens. Now, what can you tell me about, what does this iris do every day in your normal life? Is it just sitting there, or is it moving around? It's exercising. It takes my advice all the time, right? It exercises. Thank you. All right. So So the iris is going to dilate and contract, but if it's glued to the cornea, guess what happens? It can't move. So you can imagine what happens to your vision, even though maybe your eye can heal the hole and the aqueous humor comes back. The cornea is now glued to the iris. Totally screws up your vision for the rest of your life. Good idea to wear glasses all the time, in my opinion, okay, to protect that cornea right there. The iris also touches the lens, and it gets glued together. And we'll see in just a little bit that the job of the lens is to change shape all the time. It's changing shape. But if it's glued to the iris and glued to the cornea, it can't change shape. So again, that screws up your vision for the rest of your life, right? So you got to really protect your cornea, right? If you're going to work on your car, your motorcycle, put a swing set together for your kids or something, you're using a hammer and screwdrivers and nuts and bolts that could break and fly up in your eye, guess what you should be wearing? Eye protection all the time. Even probably riding a bicycle, I would, yeah. An eye ulcer. That sounds very particular. I'm not familiar with exactly what that means. I'm not really sure. An ulcer means to me some kind of erosive process, some kind of erosion happening someplace in the eye, and I'm not sure I know where that is happening. Okay. But I could Google that really fast and see if there's like a common kind of pathology. I'm not familiar with it. All right. So that aqueous humor comes from someplace. All right, just like, where does synovial fluid come from? The synovial membrane, yeah. And your brain has ventricles filled with cerebrospinal fluid. I don't know if we talked about this, but where is that fluid produced? Did we talk? Yeah, maybe in lab last time. It's called the choroid plexus. The choroid plexus produces cerebrospinal fluid. Well, there is a structure in the eye that produces that aqueous humor. And that's a ciliary process right about here, right? So that ciliary process is producing fluid all the time, and it flows from this posterior cavity of the anterior segment through the pupil into, right, this anterior cavity of the anterior segment of the eye, and then it drains from this cavity here into the venous scleral sinus. So that maintains the pressure of that fluid very, very low in this anterior segment of the eye. But every once in a while, maybe the eye produces way too much fluid to drain out of this anterior segment, or that sinus becomes plugged up and fluid starts to build up in this anterior segment of the eye. And that puts pressure on the vitreous humor, and then that puts pressure on the retina. And when the retina has pressure on it, then that cuts off the blood supply. What happens to the retina as a result? It dies as a result. Does anybody know what condition that is? Probably all have heard of that, the name, but not really heard it explained just in that. That's called glaucoma. Glaucoma is when you have too high a pressure of the aqueous humor in this anterior segment of the eye. And eventually, that's going to kill the retina. And when that happens, then, of course, you're blind. So that's a really serious condition. Can anybody remember how that was diagnosed or checked in you? Every time you get your eyes checked, yeah, there's a machine that blows a little puff of air on your cornea. And they watch your cornea. And if your cornea has high pressure behind it, it's not going to cause a dimple in the cornea. It's just going to bounce right off. And then you know you have glaucoma. But if you have low pressure, which you should, when that air hits your eye, that causes the cornea to retract and then bounce back and forth, and then they can tell you have the proper level of pressure inside that anterior segment of the eye. Okay. So those are some of the important structures for lab. I need to talk a little bit more about vision when we get to lecture sometime in 2 weeks. But that's the most of the structures. Oh, another structure that I forgot to mention. All right, here is the optic nerve on the posterior pole of the eye. Okay, maybe I'll just hold it up. Here's the optic nerve, and this is sending signals to the brain, so it's a sensory nerve. And it attaches to the retina, right? This is where it's attaching to the retina, right here. And what can you? What kind of retina? What part of the retina do you see right there? That's where the optic nerve is, right? But what about the retina? There's no retina right there. There's no rod or cone cells right there. So that produces a blind spot. That blind spot is what we call the optic disc. And so right now you have one blind spot in one eye and you have another blind spot in the other eye, but do you see it? Do you see your blind spot? No, because your brain is erasing it. It's filling in information with your other eye. And so when I look around, I just don't see a blind spot. But if anybody's interested, I can show you how to find your blind spot. I can put a little mark on the, a little diagram on the board. And if we get your head just in the right way, then that mark is going to disappear completely. Because it's in what? The blind spot by your optic disc. So if we have time today, if not, then maybe next time. So your brain is real important in forming images that you have and processing information. Another real interesting thing that your brain does to tell you how your brain makes your reality proper, the way you think it should be. I could give you a pair of glasses that put the world upside down. They invert the world. So it's going to put the floor up where the ceiling is and then put the ceiling down where the floor is. Right? And you can walk around, stumble around, but after about a half hour, guess what your brain does? Even though you have the upside down glasses on, it's going to flip the image for you. So the floor is back down over here and the ceiling is up over here and it will look completely normal for you. And your brain does that after about a half hour, but you might be really nauseated until, so I don't really like to do that. It'll give you a case of projectile vomiting, which is pretty obnoxious. Okay. So, but here's the strange thing. So you can take the inverting glasses off after you're used to them, and guess how things look? They look upside down even though you're not wearing any glasses whatsoever for about 5 minutes, and then your brain flips it the way it is again. All right, so I think that kind of describes why practicums are so hard in anatomy, right? Because you have a certain picture in your mind about how things should look, but what is it? It maybe doesn't relate to reality really well. Right? It takes a lot of practice to be a pure observer without being colored by previous experiences. All right, so our brains do that. All right, so I think you need to practice with your eye models a little bit. Make sure you can find the three layers of the eye, the extrinsic eye muscles, the anterior segment, the posterior segment, quiz each other on what kind of materials are in there, the different kinds of cells. And on my model, I didn't have a lens, but some of these models do have lenses with them. So the lens is the line of demarcation between the posterior segment and the anterior segment of the eye.